To learn how to find properties, you must first understand what makes a property attractive as an investment. And the answer to that depends a lot on you and your goals. As a general rule, you should purchase only properties that you're comfortable owning. And this rule applies not only to the type of property you buy, but to the size as well. For example, if you feel comfortable owning single-family properties, you might want to stick with them until you feel confident to move on to something bigger. If you do have experience purchasing small commercial properties, you might want to think twice before you purchase a 35-story bank building. On the other hand, if you have experience purchasing commercial property, then by all means continue to invest in that kind of property. You can find many hot investment properties on my website, carltonsheets.com. Beyond your comfort level, you must make sure that you purchase only properties that will be profitable. If you don't do the proper analysis beforehand, you may end up with an alligator, which is what I call a property that has a substantial and continuing negative cash flow. When it comes to property type, investment properties come in many shapes and forms. Deciding which properties are best for your own situation and needs will automatically help you focus your investing efforts on the most lucrative areas. In general, there are three types of property you can invest in: vacant land, commercial property, and residential property. Residential property includes apartment buildings and single-family homes. As a beginning investor, you might want to pay special attention to distressed properties, for example, properties undergoing foreclosure. You might find that any one of the previously referenced types may be obtainable through or outside of foreclosure. Now let me briefly talk about each type of property. In some ways, owning vacant land seems to be part of the great American dream. Old sayings like, buy land, they're not making any more of it, encourages people to go out and buy vacant land. And if you know what you're doing, you can make money investing in vacant land. For example, you could buy a vacant tract of land and subdivide it into lots, double the price, and sell the lots for a large profit. You could even buy a vacant tract of land and develop it, that is, to build on the land. In general, though, vacant land is not a good investment. Even if you invest in a vacant plot of land and sell it 9 or 10 years later for twice the purchase price, you really haven't made a lot of money. Why? Because vacant land produces no income to offset expenses. You also lose out on any potential interest you would have made by investing the money elsewhere. In addition, you must pay real estate taxes, selling expenses, maintenance costs, special assessment costs, and in some cases even insurance. Sometimes you even have to pay for special maintenance, such as removing vegetation from the property or cleaning up litter to conform to city and county codes. All in all, the average annual cost of owning a piece of vacant land can run as high as 15 to 20% of what you paid for it. Added to these direct costs is the indirect cost of inflation. The dollars you receive from the sale of the property are going to be worth less than the dollars you spent to acquire and maintain it. It turns out that if you can't sell the property for twice what you paid for it within 2 or 3 years, you're probably not going to make any money investing in vacant land. Let's talk about commercial properties. Commercial properties are rented to tenants that use the space to conduct business. They are income properties for the owners because the tenant businesses pay monthly or yearly rent. Some examples of commercial investment properties include hotels and motels, nursing homes, office buildings, post office buildings, restaurants, retail stores, shopping centers, and warehouses. Some of these properties might seem obvious to you as income properties, while others will probably not. For example, most people are aware that investors own office buildings. Many are not aware, though, that many restaurants and stores and even post office buildings are investor-owned. I even know of one religious congregation that leases its church from an investor. The lesson here is that when it comes to income properties, the range of options is very large. Early in your real estate investing career, you will probably want to concentrate on residential properties, that is, properties in which people reside. For the beginning investor, however, single-family homes offer the very best investment opportunity. When you have gained experience as an investor, you might then want to consider investing in larger multi-unit properties, like apartment buildings. As I just said, though, single-family homes generally represent the best investment opportunities, because not only are single-family homes lower in cost, they're also very plentiful in the marketplace. The best part is that many owners of single-family homes are flexible sellers. The sales activity for all types of existing homes varies widely across the country. There are more single-family homes sold than condominiums and cooperatives, which are also called co-ops. And in fact, nationwide, demand for single-family homes represents a substantial portion of the total home market. Over the years, I've concentrated on investing in single-family homes and apartment buildings. I particularly like apartment buildings because they allow me to gain maximum leverage with my time. By that, I mean I can buy a 50-unit apartment building in about the same time frame that I can buy two or three single-family homes. It's also somewhat easier to deal with sellers of apartment buildings because they are generally more knowledgeable and the opportunity for making large profits is much greater with apartment buildings than it is with single-family homes. Raising rents by just a few dollars on each apartment can result in an increase in the building's value by many thousands of dollars. Now, that's not to say that there aren't some disadvantages to owning apartment buildings. There are. The risks are greater, they are more management intensive, and the mentality of the tenant is entirely different, which can result in a much greater turnover. Maintenance costs can be higher, and the tenants are more likely to damage the property. In addition, finance terms may be less desirable, at least if you're obtaining a bank loan. Despite all of these apparent shortcomings, once you've gained some experience investing, I encourage you to consider investing in apartment buildings or other multi-unit buildings. Also, as a beginning investor, you'll want to pay special attention to distressed properties. For example, properties undergoing foreclosure. Distressed properties are those that, for one reason or another, are inexpensive due to the condition of the property or the situation of the seller. As you visit homes you're considering purchasing, you'll find many homes that are inexpensive only because they're in need of cosmetic repairs. Some neighborhoods will also have multi-unit properties such as two-family, three-family, and four-family rental units that fall into the same category. Oftentimes, the owners of these properties are forced to sell because of high maintenance costs, mortgages with high interest rates, job loss, divorce, death, or a host of other reasons. Because these homes exist in large numbers, finding flexible sellers in this market is not a difficult task. You can't find something if you don't know what to look for. Basically, other than the quality of the construction, there are four things to look for in a potential investment property: price range, the neighborhood, rent rates, and whether or not the property fits what I call a hole in the marketplace. Also, as you'll see a little later, seller financing also plays a big part in the attractiveness of a property. Let's look at these four areas one at a time. First, price. When it comes to price, single-family homes can generally be grouped into four categories: inexpensive, moderately expensive, expensive, and ultra-expensive. A good way to visualize their distribution in the market is to view the market as a pyramid. At the very top of the pyramid are the ultra-expensive properties, and at the bottom are all of the inexpensive properties. It should be easy to see that there are far more inexpensive properties in the market than there are ultra-expensive ones. Consequently, common sense suggests that you're probably better off dealing with homes that are at or near the lower part of the pyramid only because there are more of them. In actual fact, your best bet is to concentrate on homes that fit in the region that falls between the upper part of the inexpensive category and the lower part of the moderately expensive category. These types of properties are referred to as bread-and-butter properties because they're plentiful and they're in demand by the largest number of people. Now, apartment buildings really don't fit the pyramid model I just spoke of, but they make for good investments on a per-unit basis because you can buy for a lower per-unit cost than you can for single-family homes. For example, an average single-family home in your area might cost, $150,000, while a two-unit rental property might cost $200,000, which works out to a per-unit cost of $100,000. Generally, the lower the cost per unit, the easier you can structure a no-down-payment purchase with a break-even or a positive cash flow. Second, the neighborhood. The choice of neighborhood can make or break a real estate investment. In general, you've got to make sure that you don't buy the right property in the wrong neighborhood or the wrong property in the right neighborhood. Only when you have knowledge about the overall marketplace will you be able to select the neighborhoods to invest in. To develop that knowledge, you've got to gather all the information you can. Now, good sources of information include real estate brokers, agents and investors, chambers of commerce, postal employees, tax assessors, utility company employees, police, delivery persons, local investment clubs, title insurance companies, bankers. I could go on and on. All of these sources have one thing in common. Either directly or indirectly, their business involves real estate. To tap into their knowledge, you should approach all of them the same way, by identifying yourself as a relatively new investor and asking the following sorts of questions. What are your general observations about the real estate market in this area? Then you might ask, do properties frequently appear on the market for sale, and if so, do they sell quickly? Do you live in this area, and if so, do you like it? Would you consider investing in this area, and if you did, what kinds of properties would you buy? Are there any areas where the real estate values seem to be going up faster than in others? Are there any areas that you would stay away from as a real estate investor? In addition to gathering information from your sources, you should scout on your own for details. I mean, if you've lived in the same city for a number of years, you probably go to work the same way each day, shop at the same retail stores, and have a tendency to frequent the same areas. As a result, you probably know less about your city than you think you do. Here's some advice. Change your routine. You might be surprised at the opportunities you'll find just by trying to become familiar with areas that are currently foreign to you. Make it a point to drive home a different way each day from work or shopping, and if nothing else, you'll gain valuable information about the region you live in. Still talking about the four things that make a property a good investment, number three is rent rates. Rent rates are an important consideration when looking at a property. For some reasons not fully understood, $100,000 homes in one area, for example, will rent for 10 to 20% less than $100,000 homes in another area. Since the marketplace dictates rent rates, it's difficult to purchase a home in one of these neighborhoods and offer it for rent at a rate 20% higher than the rent charge for a similar property. It's important, therefore, to learn what rents are being paid in a specific area. Finally, number four, when you're looking for properties, you should pay special attention to those that fill what I call holes in the marketplace. Any property that does not exist in great numbers but is in great demand is considered a hole in the marketplace. These are properties that are most easily rented and have the lowest vacancy rate, therefore they make the best investments. Properties with fenced-in yards, for example, garages, four or five bedrooms, ceiling fans, fireplaces, central heat and air conditioning, and finished basements all fall into this category. So do properties that are available for rent in the very best school districts or those that are located within a short commuting distance of popular places of employment. You might never find a property that possesses every one of these characteristics, but the more of these in-demand characteristics that a property has, the better investment it's going to be for you. Now, to a certain extent, you can create some of these characteristics after you buy the property. For example, you can fence in a yard or install central air conditioning or put in ceiling fans. However, it's certainly not practical to make a two-bedroom home into a five-bedroom home, and you can't improve a school district or a commuting distance. The factors that determine whether or not a property fills a hole in the marketplace often depends on the population distribution in an area. If you pay attention to population information, you can buy and improve properties with distinctive features that attract the largest group of potential renters. The largest segment of the population for the country as a whole is between 25 and 44 years old. As time goes on, the number of people over the age of 45 will continue to increase, and the needs of the population in general will change accordingly. The first of the 76 million baby boomers in this country turned 50 in 1996, and the last of them will not turn 50 until 2014. Knowing the population distribution in your area, whether it's made up of growing families or people who are retired, will help you select properties that have the greatest chance of filling holes in the marketplace. Once you know what to look for in an investment property and the four things that make a property a good investment, the question then becomes how to go about finding them. Finding investment properties is a matter of tapping your sources. I mentioned some of these sources before, like real estate brokers and investors. Others include newspapers, internet listings, public records, personal and professional contacts, government agencies, and just plain personal observation. Now, many local newspapers carry a lot of real estate advertising and are very good sources for potential investment properties. In addition to advertising, newspapers also carry notices of public auctions for real estate, many of which represent foreclosures or other types of distressed properties. The internet, too, is a great tool to use in locating properties. Many local real estate agencies have their own websites. You can use a search engine such as Google at google.com or Yahoo at yahoo.com to find the ones that pertain to your local area. These websites often include the area's current market offerings in detail. Now, many local newspaper websites also list current area listings, and some include archives where you can search for previous sales. Doing so can give you an idea of prices for specific neighborhoods and the types of properties in your area. Another good source of information is the public records. All real estate transactions are legally recorded. Now, you can look these up yourself at your local recorder's office, or you can find listings of publicly recorded real estate transactions on the internet. For the quickest way to get information on properties from county, parish, or borough records across the country, visit my website, carltonsheets.com. Other often overlooked sources for locating potential investment properties are your own family and friends. Don't be afraid to let them know that you're looking for properties. Also, don't forget your network of professional contacts, people you work with every day or people who belong to the same professional organizations you do. There's nothing wrong with asking them for their help in locating properties. Talking to as many people as possible can expand your sources significantly. Look particularly for properties that have flexible financing in addition to their locations. Included in this category would be any property that has existing, assumable, conventional financing, owner financing, or no financing. All of these arrangements make the property easier to purchase. Also, government agencies can be a great help when it comes to finding properties. For example, you can contact the Department of Veteran Affairs, which is the VA, the Federal Housing Administration, which is the FHA, the Federal National Mortgage Association, known as Fannie Mae, or the Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation, known as Freddie Mac, for listings on their properties and foreclosures. It is now necessary to qualify for a VA or an FHA loan. One exception, though, and this is important. According to VA Circular 26-90-37, you don't need VA approval if you buy a property on an installment contract or any other agreement in which the seller does not pass title until the loan is paid. Always double-check with the appropriate government agency regarding terms of your loan. Finally, don't forget that your car is one of your best tools for finding investment properties. To use it to its best advantage, obtain a map of the area you want to look in from the local chamber of commerce, a bank, or a real estate broker, then go on your own personal scouting tour to learn more about your city and its neighborhoods. Your objective in doing this is to get acquainted with the layout of the areas where you're going to eventually make your investments. You do not have to drive long distances. In fact, you should try to confine your investing activities within a 10-mile radius of your home. If you're a beginner, confine yourself to neighborhoods of single-family, two-unit, or three-unit properties. If you're more seasoned, then add larger properties to your search. In addition to driving around and taking stock of the neighborhoods and homes, you should learn all you can from the people you meet who live and work there. Ask questions of people you see walking in the area, residents working in their yards, local retail store owners and employees, or even a postal employee delivering mail to the neighborhood. You should adapt your questions to fit the circumstances of the person you're talking to, but in general, your question should go something like this. For example, I'm thinking about buying property in this neighborhood. Tell me, do you live here? And if so, have you lived here long? Do you rent or own? Are there any renters in this neighborhood? Do you have any idea of the price of homes in this area? Do you know what people are currently paying for rent in this neighborhood? Tell me, what do you like most about the neighborhood? What do you like least? If you were to buy a rental property, would you buy it in this neighborhood? If so, why or why not? Do you know of any properties for sale or rent? You'll be amazed at just how much information you can develop about a neighborhood just by asking these questions. I'm always astounded by what you can learn if you simply go out and talk to people.